a migrant caravan chanting as thousands of men, women, and children make their way north to seek asylum in Mexico or in the United States. We are migrants, not criminals, they say. Why do they kill us? The group began just a week and a half ago with only 160 people in Honduras. But as it traveled through Honduras, Guatemala, and then toward Mexico, it grew and grew into the thousands. We begin today with the latest on the caravan of thousands of Central American migrants escaping the Northern Triangle through Mexico. After federal police in Mexico attempted to block the migrants' entry into the country last week, President Trump tweeted his praise for the move and spoke about it during the signing of a presidential memorandum in Arizona.
So as of this moment, I thank Mexico. I hope they continue, but as of this moment, I thank Mexico. If that doesn't work out, we're calling up the military, not the guard. We're calling up the military. And we're going to have the military stationed. They're not coming into this country. They might as well turn back.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Here to talk about Mexico's migration enforcement policies, as well as the U.S.'s role in those plans, is Maya Averbach. She's a freelance reporter currently writing for The New York Times, who is with the migrants in Chiapas, Mexico.
There are people who are generally coming from Honduras, so there are others from El Salvador and Guatemala. They're all from Central America and are heading north, often because of dire economic conditions where they've been living, at times because the cities or towns where they live in have become quite violent. There's a high rate of gang violence in Central America. And these different factors have pressed people to leave their countries. And you see a rise also in the number of families who are traveling together. You see a lot of parents with little kids, which we've seen over the past few years, but it's particularly noticeable when the group is this large.
I'm just curious, what has been the Mexican response to migrants? Have they used force to prevent them from moving forward?
When the migrants first came to the bridge between Mexico and Guatemala, that's the official entry point, the Mexican government and the Guatemalan government had police blocking the entry point. The Mexican government had riot police there. That riot police, as you might have seen in news reports, used tear gas to try to repel the crowd and succeeded in at least pushing them back enough so that the gate that they had pushed open could be closed again. And then the government said that it would start processing people. It's so far processed a little bit more than 300 people a day. And that has been the main use of force. Since then, the Mexican government has pretty much not tried to stop the migrants. There are too many migrants for them to really do anything other than escort people as they go by. So we've seen a police presence. There was a police helicopter flying around. There's a large federal police force that has come down specifically because of this mass migration. But at this point, it's also left to municipal governments to try to figure out, where do we put all these people? Can we fit them into a stadium? Can we fit them into parks? Can we fit them into some sort of municipal auditorium? And that ends up being the larger question that has to be answered, because the Mexican government is not about to stop these thousands of people from walking through. What they have done is tried to encourage people to apply for some sort of legal status, be that refugee status in Mexico, it's the equivalent of asylum, or some other sort of paperwork. They've mentioned visas. In the past, there's been the option to get sort of a safe passage permit, as happened in the last caravan. But people are generally distrustful of the government in various spaces. The government has said you can stay here to rest. There are fairgrounds in Tapachula and another space where we are now in Wixla, and people have generally exited those government-sanctioned spaces out of fear that they might be deported.
At what point is the Mexican government or any of these governments thinking that this could become a humanitarian crisis if there are nowhere, is there really nowhere for these folks to go?
I mean, I think this is already a humanitarian crisis and people are going to keep going north. The question is what will happen along the route, whether the government will try to intervene later on, what the U.S. government will try to do to intervene. And I also think that there are just hardships of walking these distances in the incredible sun with few resources that are going to be apparent. Mexico has its own long history of migration. And so there are also people who you will find who will say that some of the Central Americans are criminals who think they've been paid, or different rumors that you also hear in the U.S. On the other hand, there are many people who have turned out, whether they're just from local community groups or from church groups or people who just walk out of their houses and have had a far friendlier response and have tried to help out.
Maya Averbach is a freelance journalist in Mexico. Maya, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
On Monday morning, the president had this response to the mass migration on Twitter. Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador were not able to do the job of stopping people from leaving their country and coming illegally to the U.S. We will now begin cutting off or substantially reducing the massive foreign aid routinely given to them, said the president. Well, that could mean even more cuts in aid to the region. In 2016, the United States Congress allocated $750 million for development assistance in Central America. In the 2018 budget, that request, that number was reduced to $460 million. So what can we make of the president's latest threat? Joining me now to answer that question is Mark Feirstein. Feirstein was former assistant administrator for Latin America and the Caribbean at the U.S. Agency for International Development. And today he's a senior advisor at the Albright Stonebridge Group. Mark, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
So what exactly, I mean, can the president make good on that threat to either unilaterally cut off or substantially reduce foreign aid?
In short, no. The president cannot do that. Congress has the power of the purse. Congress appropriates money, and the executive branch is required to spend it. Now, Congress can make a decision to cut assistance, limit assistance, but I think it's important to point out that the assistance that we've been providing to Central America for decades, and particularly the increases in the last few years, and you mentioned the increase in 2016, that increase had bipartisan support. Both Democrats and Republicans recognize that the way to reduce migration is to improve the lives of the people in Central America and Guatemala and El Salvador, and to strengthen the capacity of these governments to reduce crime and to reduce poverty.
Well, listen,
and if we, And if obviously it'd be counterproductive if we were to cut this assistance, because that would just lead to more migration.
So then the question is, we have cut that assistance. In 2016, it was $750 million. And in 2018, the budget request is now down to $460 million. What gives there? What's that about?
Well, this is an administration that doesn't really believe in foreign assistance, and a president who doesn't appreciate and understand the value of foreign assistance. He tends to see it as a gift. And what he doesn't understand is that whether we're spending it in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, or other places around the world, it's really in the U.S. national interest to be supporting these countries. And I think there are four reasons in particular with regard to Central America. Obviously, we're trying to reduce migration. We do that by helping these countries to, as I noted, to reduce crime, reduce poverty. There are commercial reasons to support foreign assistance as these countries, as people in these countries become wealthier, as they move into middle class, they become consumers. And they become, therefore, consumers of U.S. products, and that creates jobs in the United States. There's also national security reasons. There are drug trafficking organizations, gangs that operate in these countries, and we have an interest in strengthening the capacity of these countries to combat those organizations. And again, there are humanitarian reasons. I mean, people are living in poverty and desperate conditions in these places, and we have an obligation as a prosperous country to try to provide assistance to them.
And 4 years after the migration crisis that caused President Obama to respond, we seem to be in a similar situation. And I'm wondering, is there any way to evaluate how much of the aid went and where it was supposed to go? Has the aid been effective?
That's an important question. And I think AID and other organizations do their best to try to assess the impact of the aid. And I'll offer one example. USAID a few years ago basically began a pilot program, and they looked at the areas of the country where there was the highest levels of crime, and then they invested a great amount in certain areas, and then in certain areas they did not, and they saw that the areas where they were investing, where they were training police, where they were providing assistance to youth and building youth centers and giving them providing them with job opportunities and job training. They found that in those areas where the investments were being made, crime went down, and the areas where the investments were not being made, crime went up. Now, the key is obviously to scale up those programs over time and to empower these countries to carry out the programs on their own. But I think there is, you know, good evidence that in many cases that the aid programs have been working. But we have to continue to evaluate, and where programs are not working, they need to be revised or eliminated.
Well, and there's also critics of the policy, of U.S. policy in Central America, who would say that the U.S. is partly responsible for a lot of the political climate that we see in these countries, like Honduras. How do you respond to that?
Well, look, the United States has a checkered history in Latin America, but I think in recent years, the United States has been largely very supportive of democratic movements there, been supportive of human rights, and I think there has been some setbacks in this administration. But I think certainly during the Bush administration, during the Clinton and Obama administrations, we saw strong support for democratic movements in the hemisphere and strong support for them to improve their governance. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing a diminishing of that now. This president and this administration does not put emphasis on democracy and human rights in the way previous administrations did. Look, foreign policy is always a balance of values and interests, and this administration puts the scale very heavily on interests and limits the importance of values.
Well, but it also seems to be having a direct impact. I mean, the president is now threatening to cut aid as this caravan makes its way north.
Well, look, I'd be surprised, to be honest, if the assistance is in fact cut. I think he's going to get some pushback within his own administration. People in the State Department, USAID, Department of Justice, DEA, I think they all recognize the importance of supporting their partners in these countries. So I'd be very surprised if we do in fact see a cut in assistance. I think this is just empty bluster on the part of the president, and it's one of many examples.
Mark Feirstein served as Assistant Administrator for Latin America and the Caribbean at USAID, and he's currently the Senior Advisor at the Albright Stonebridge Group. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you. Appreciate it.